Improvement and the Impact Collaborative. And she even has time to do presentations on the Call to Action series. So, Karen, I thank you for being here. Let me say a little bit more about Karen. She is an RN and has an undergraduate degree in business and healthcare management and will complete an MBA in 2003. So, Karen, we're very pleased to have you with us. And we know you have a busy schedule, so it's great to have you with us here. Karen McKinley.
Thanks, Maria. Thank you for your time. What I'd like to do today, I think I'm more of the nuts and bolts of the program. I am going to try to give you some helpful questions and helpful hints about leadership's role in spreading and sustaining change. And I'd like to focus in five areas: the rollout plan, resources, knowledge, communication, and a twist on communication, which is the feedback part. I think bottom line, what we've learned at Geisinger is that this work is all about leadership. It is successful or not based on the leadership that you've invested in the process. My slides are at the bottom of each page, beginning at page 20 and go through, I think, page 25, so you can just follow along with me there. So beginning with the rollout plan, when considering a rollout plan, I think leadership responsibilities might include several things. The first is a timeline. As a leader, you're in the process of deciding, or you've decided on your deployment plan, and some timing questions you might want to consider are, what's the urgency within your organization? What specifically is that urgency, and where is it? I think that leaders can capitalize on that knowledge to help determine the timing of the rollout process. Another question might be, how rapid can you as a leader expect spread to occur and yet make sure that a foundation or an infrastructure is in place to sustain the change? You can look at the maturity of your teams. How might you assess the team's capability to manage this process? And have you considered support staff to work at least initially with each team to jumpstart the work? Finally, will you mandate deployment of the changes, or are you going to allow the change to take place at its own pace? That's a critical question in selection of your teams and the timeline with which they might move this process out. In the selection, leaders identify the strategic direction necessary for success in the selection process. The areas and sites that are chosen and in what order, you might consider how you first develop those sites who can use their strength to then sustain the change going forward. One possibility might be to start the spread with interested staff, especially if they're informal leaders or well-respected by their peers. That is often an extra boost that will carry the movement forward faster. Another might be to choose sites that have been able to determine past innovation success. They usually are a very mature team and can not only produce a good product in a pilot model, but can help sustain the process moving forward. The methodology can be critical, and I think that the leadership is responsible for ensuring that necessary tools are available to their teams to move the process. From the team's perspective, are the tools readily available, and do they know how to make their needs known to you to get those tools? From leadership's view, you might want to know, are there gaps holding back improvement? And if there are, how will you know about that? How have you set up the communication to make sure that you can identify those and help to block and tackle them, if you will? And again, how will you address the gaps so that they do not occur going forward? Just because you've closed one gap doesn't mean it won't happen in another team. In measurement, as Vince Lombardi said, if you're not keeping score, you are only practicing. Leadership is responsible for ensuring that there are clearly defined aims and that they're in line with the organization's strategic vision. Frequent tests of change cycles are critical in the team structure. The work has to be incorporated into what they do every day and not an added piece of responsibility for them. It's got to be the way that they do business. And measurement frequency is important in that it's validated by senior leadership, so you know when to expect measures, and you have an opportunity to review them and communicate back to the teams about their successes and challenges. And then finally, communication. I can't stress enough to communicate. Staff meetings using data walls in the individual sites and leadership meetings are great places to share progress and challenges. Leadership plays a role, finally, in regular assessment. It's important for us to know in our organization who will assess the progress of the teams, and deciding how leaders will interface with the teams, how often in person, is it in writing, how will you go about doing that, and then and finally, how often the interaction will occur. Any change, whether it's people or patients or processes, is a very human experience. providing resources to support staff through change is essential. These same resources are also essential to sustain the games. Many people, at least in our organization, thought that the additional resources were only for the initial parts of the work and not necessarily once the change has taken place, but sometimes they're even more important at that point. So if we go to resources, in addition to material, we really need defined roles of leadership support, and you might consider the following. A sponsor, someone who charges the initiative and assumes the highest leadership role for the organization. They are responsible for making sure and that barriers are eliminated or reduced. They're in charge of the blocking and tackling, although they may not do it directly. A facility leader, at least in our organization, is one who supports and communicates the work of the team. In smaller organizations, it might be the same person as the sponsor. In a larger organization, two people would be very helpful. Two leaders would be very helpful. Making sure that successes are communicated and celebrated also falls on the facility leader. A unit leader I like to call, as I think Chuck Kylo started, the drumbeat of the initiative. This is the person who demonstrates constancy of purpose, who understands the rationale and helps others come on board with the vision. They are responsible for just beating the drum and making sure that the message continually goes through the team and all of the surrounding entities that are engaged in this work. Holding gains through monitoring and feedback falls under this person, as well as helping to maintain the focus of the team on the work that's being done, and not letting them take their mind off the main thing that they're to be doing. A champion is an interesting role and may or may not be a team member. It's often an informal leader or a respected staff leader who has an interest in this process but isn't necessarily in the core team. They tend to be helpful in providing what I'll call cheerleading behind the scenes, and they bring along those who doubt the value of the change. That's been a very helpful role for our organization. Finding them is the most difficult part. Frontline staff are critical, a different kind of leadership, but very important. They can help with buy-in at the local level, and they can also be a great team leader. And finally, a concept that we've used, and not everyone has, but support staff in helping to spread and sustain change. They take some of the burden, or possibly take some of the burden off the caregivers who might be on the front line. They can be used to offload some of the measures and the reporting, and research new ideas and techniques to continue to stimulate the team. And in that way, bringing new knowledge to educate the team as well. They can also document progress and maintain such things as data walls if you find that helpful. So why define and clarify these resources? Well, it brings clarity to the process and provides depth in the leadership ranks to ensure that there is progress. Moving on, new knowledge is critical to the change process, but I think it's absolutely essential to spreading and sustaining change. Teams need to be reinvigorated on a routine basis, and without new knowledge, that's difficult to happen. They get caught up in the day-to-day and basically lose focus on what the work is that they're to do. Leaders help the organization understand the importance of the collaborative meeting, the goals of the organization. They help to set stretch goals. They encourage shared progress across teams and facilities. They encourage and support visits with other organizations for learning. The collaborative purpose is something that has to be understood in every component of the organization. The team can't be isolated in their work, or that's exactly where the work will stop. I heard someone say that all models are good and some models are helpful. I know that Marie shared some models. It's important that we use any model that will work for us and that we identify the spread model that has the right fit and feel for the organization. Also, don't be afraid to deviate somewhat to meet your needs and to consider the local implementation of a model that might need to be slightly adjusted or tweaked to meet the needs of that local area. I mentioned tools earlier, but I didn't mention time. Time is another kind of tool. I think one of our biggest challenges in the work that we've been doing is dedicating time to learn and time to change. Leadership must understand and support the time to obtain new knowledge and conduct tests of change. Dedicated time to change is something that enables it to be sustained. It builds the new processes into the culture. What can leaders do to expand the horizons of their team? Well, they can do support, what I call support materials. They encourage conference calls to encourage new knowledge and new relationships. We do a lot of conference calling within the Impact Network, and it's been extremely valuable. We've built individual and group relationships with which we share new knowledge and challenge each other. Allowing visits to other organizations can open eyes to what could be. Now, both of these require extra money usually, and that's the challenge, and only leadership can allocate this to the teams. So the understanding of the importance of it is just critical to the success of the initiative. Leaders need to pay attention to action plans, and I encourage action plans. Our teams have all used them, and they're maintained on either a shared folder in our email or on the web, InfoWeb, to track the team's progress, to look at the detail and use it as a leader when you next visit that unit or site. Pick out one thing and just ask the group about it and see if they're able to talk about it or whether it's only a few that are really experiencing the change. It's important for leaders to attend team meetings. We've learned that in our critical care collaborative. The leadership being at the team meetings has meant to the team that we care and that we're invested in the work that they're doing, and the hard work that they're doing in addition to their care provision is important to everyone. Is everyone engaged in the process when you go to the team meetings, or again, is it just a few people? And what can you do to help to move that forward? And finally, question progress and provide frequent encouragement in person if possible. And then finally, under the knowledge, there needs to be supporting policy and procedure change, and often that's a gap that happens in moving new initiatives or change forward. Leaders help to move change through formal channels and provide forums for information exchange organization-wide. Moving on to communication, I heard a leader from the Mayo, I think it was Bill Rupp, say that communication to be effective, it's necessary to happen 8 times 8 ways, I believe is how he said it. You can't emphasize enough that communication throughout your organization during these processes is critical. So let me share a few things about the message and the frequency, consistency, meeting time, and methods and forums that we might consider. Leaders must state clear expectation for a change process, and that message has to be modified for all levels of personnel to understand. A change that might be happening in critical care at the caregiver level might need to have the cooperation and buy-in of ancillary personnel, and so the message may need to be tweaked for a variety of people to understand the vision and the goals that we're trying to attain. Leaders provide the connection of a message to the goals at both the system and, of course, at the local level. And while delivery in print is good, delivery of the message in person is best. We always gain more when one of our leaders stops by a team meeting or a unit to inquire about the progress. Notes are good, but in person is great. Frequency. Insist on active involvement at all levels of leadership on a regular basis. Touching base with teams and the progress, no less than weekly, is a good practice. And it doesn't have to be an executive vice president or a CEO. You can touch all layers of leadership and have them interchanged and stopping by to talk to the teams and the units on a routine basis. And again, I can't stress enough, interactions personally with staff on a regular basis indicates the importance of the initiative and develops relationships that can help sustain the changes that are being implemented. Dr. Berwick said in a meeting at Impact, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. So the message has to be consistent and clear and concise, simple and understandable. Consistency of purpose is clearly, if we take our eye off the ball, we get diverted by the day-to-day and the work doesn't get done and the change doesn't happen. Meeting times and methods and forums are all about the way that we, again, carry the message. It can't be in addition to the work. It has to be the way that work is done. So incorporating meeting times and opportunities for discussion into the daily schedule is a critical component of moving forward. And leadership, again, has to be supportive of this and actually encourage it. It's also important for leadership, senior leadership, to share the work in progress at all opportunities, both within and outside the organization. Board meetings are clearly critical, as well as all the leadership meetings in the organization, But also some community opportunities may present themselves, and you'll find that you'll have volunteers and interest from a variety of people that support your health system that can be very effective in helping you not only spread the change but sustain the change. We've seen a lot of that in patient safety and our community members on our patient safety teams and what they've been able to do to help us move forward. Now, feedback, finally, is something needed at all levels to encourage progress is on track. The only thing worse than bad news is bad news late. So quickly, frequency of feedback is important. We want to review measures and reports on a regular basis and look for progress to goal, variation, and areas to improve, and where we might be able to help when that variation is apparent. Leaders rounding in areas should ask to see the data wall and see what's on it and look and ask questions about the work that's being done. We look for the types of feedback, team meeting summaries, tests of change, trend charts, pick up the phone, send an email, recognize the progress of the staff and progress of the team in a staff meeting. All of those are critical to keep the team engaged and moving forward. Methods and forums are, again, about the kinds of meetings that we do, the opportunities we have with roundings, and the attention that we pay to progress reports. If it's important to the leader, it will be important to the team. And then lastly, with feedback, we want to celebrate success. We don't do enough of that. We haven't done enough of it. But we want to be sure that leaders understand the importance of encouragement and support and public success celebrations in the work that's being done. So in summary, make sure that the rollout strategy is communicated to all levels of your organization. Laying out a plan is important, obviously, and a written plan is even more important. But making sure that everyone understands the work that's going on is probably the key. Ensuring the adequate resources, ask the teams. Don't wait for them to come to you. Let's make sure that we give them what they need at the beginning and not wait for them. And many of them are too afraid to come to leadership, so let's make sure that we ask them. Recognizing and accepting new knowledge. New ideas and knowledge are a catalyst for change, and they need to continue to infuse the teams and the organization. Communicate, speaks for itself. And then regular and what I call real feedback. Be there in person whenever possible. Your presence as a leader makes an incredible difference in the progress a team will make. So that's it for my presentation. Kurt, we're at the end, so I believe we're probably ready to go to questions.
Thank you very much. If you have a question for any of our presenters, all you have to do now is press number 1 on your phone's touchtone keypad, and that will put you into our question queue. When your turn comes up, I will call on you by the city and the first name of the person who registered at your location. If your question is answered while you're in line, simply press the pound key and it will take you out of the queue. If you're listening on a speakerphone and it's at all possible, please pick up the handset when you ask your question, as we'll be able to hear you much better that way. And a reminder, when you're replacing the handset, remember to press the speakerphone button so you're not disconnected. If you do, just dial back in, re-enter the PIN number, and you'll come right back into the program. So if you have a question, go ahead and press 1 now. If your question is answered while you're in line, pressing the pound key will take you out of the queue. And I don't have any email questions, and just a reminder on that, you can send an email to modc@krm.com if you wish. I do have 3 callers in. We'll go first to New York at Sanders' location, followed by Chevy Chase, Maryland, and then Rockville, Maryland. So first to Sanders' location in New York. The line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you.
Could you please speak up?
Thank you.
There we go. Thanks.
Dr. Moore, I have a question about assessing the readiness for spread in facilities that you have no direct contact or authority to institute spread. How do you assess the readiness of a distant facility to accept innovation and be ready for spread?
Okay. I think
Dr. Omoffa, if you could please repeat that question. That was very, very light, and I'm afraid some of our audience may not have heard that.
Okay. What he's asking is that if you have a distant site that you want to spread an innovation or change to, what are some of the things you should look at, understanding that this is going to be a difficult process? Did I capture that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. There are quite a few ways that you can address this issue, but I think the first thing, again, as you remember, is in the selection of a spread team, you need to look at new members and then pilot team members. And if there's going to be a new site, some of the new members should come from the new site. And in terms of who, one of the critical members, and especially if this is, let's say, a practice site, that you want to look at somebody who's influential at that site. And from my experience and in working with other centers, it seems to be that an office manager that most such sites have, such a critical person. A provider from that new site is helpful, and maybe a support staff person or a person responsible for performance improvement if there's a different person in that site. And they will bring that to the table, the experience in the new site and the challenges that they may face in rolling out the change. Also remembering that a member of the team is going to be a senior leader or a sponsor that you, if you don't have already, you might elect to have on there. That person should be influential enough across all the sites and units. And so when you begin with that, it helps increase the chances that you're going to be successful as you roll these things out to the next site. And then there are other things that I know people have looked at, and I know one of the centers that had a site like that, what they did was obviously the first process was education of the staff. What are we trying to do? Our goals? Where are we going? You know, where are we going with all of this? And in that process, in getting input, what they did was define that, well, this is what we tested in the previous site, and this is what worked. But since this site may be different, we're going to be testing these changes and fine-tuning them before spreading out for this new site. So even in spreading out change, if it's going to a new site, there is a lot of room, and it's strongly recommended that any changes also tested and TDSA'd before spreading out of the new site. You want to make sure there's going to be a gain that the staff will realize before you spread on the site. So those are some of the ways that you can look at that.
Thank you.
Any comments from either Marie or Karen on that topic?
Yes, this is Marie. I'd just like to add, I guess, to that. I mean, it's interesting, I think, to consider the different types of settings where spread is going to occur. Both of our speakers, obviously, are from organizations, but I know some people on the call represent organizations that are interested in spreading in a wider sort of network of whether it's office practices or the units that may or may not be that well connected to one another. And so I think Dr. Amofa's comments were helpful in that you can take the concepts that he's talking about that his experience is from an organizational setting, but I think they apply to other types of settings or other situations that you may be wanting to spread to. So the concept of including those to whom you want to spread, whether it's on a spread team or on some type of group that you're pulling together to try to coordinate the spread, is the idea of using testing so that the people that you're spreading to don't think that you're just trying to shove something down their throats, but you want to include them in the process of reinvention. So I think those concepts are very powerful, even though different ones of us are going to apply them in different ways, you know, given different settings.
Thank you.
And thanks to New York for that question. Next we go to Chevy Chase, Maryland, at Dennis's location, and the line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, my name is Sam Holtzman. I have two questions, one for Dr. Amofa and the other for Ms. McKinley. The first question is, Dr. Amofa talked about distractions.
Can you please speak up just a bit more? I want to make sure they hear the question.
Yes, Dr. Amofa talked about distractions, and I'm wondering, many times when you try to implement change, some of your worst distractions that you have to deal with are old habits or old ways of doing things that people have glommed onto over the years. And the question I would have is how would you deal with those kinds of distractions? Would you try to eliminate those distractions first, or would you deal with them as you go through the process of implementing change? And my second question for Ms. McKinley is, what do you think the role of incentive compensation would or should be in the process of implementing change?
I could repeat those questions if it would be helpful.
I think it would.
Okay. So the first question to Dr. Amofa was around the issue of distractions. And the questioner asked about the types of distractions that would fall under the category of old habits. Those can be some of the worst distractions. So how do you address those? And then the second question is for Karen, and that's the role of incentives and compensation in spread.
Okay, thank you, Marie. Okay, in my discussion, in referring to the major potential distractions, I was kind of looking at usually some of the external things that could detract from a major focus. But in looking at the distraction you're referring to, let's say like resistance, old habits, those kinds of things, there are different frameworks for approaching those. One of the things that I like to look at, and again from my from having faced, I guess, similar, let's call them internal distractions, is first of all to define in my mind that instead of calling these maybe distractions or resistance, there's just normal apprehension that is expected of normal human beings. Any normal human being has that propensity to have apprehension when there's going to be change, and kind of looking at some of the reasons for which they may feel that way. And I think in listening to these breakthrough series, the different approaches that have been suggested, some of which Karen also looked at, I think one of those is, again, when you look at why people don't comply with things or they pose difficulty, is one that I've read in the literature that I've always been very impressed with. That first of all, you look at the extent to which this is going to interfere with people's tasks. I think Mary mentioned it as well, you know, about this particular change, what is the extent to which this change is going to interfere with people's tasks. And sometimes that alone might be what might cause them to exude apprehension or create a distraction that is, again, we will see as resistance. And when you look at that, then, is the question, set of solutions might be, well, maybe they don't have the training or the time or the resources to do what we're trying to implement, or they didn't have input, for example. So that's one thing that you can look at. And the second thing is, well, sometimes there are negative consequences to something that we try to implement, that it's really easier doing it the other way than to do it this way or the way that we're looking at. Again, looking at the principles of changing people's behavior, you know, the solutions there look at making people feel that it's worthwhile to do what you want done or what you're suggesting should be done, rather than the way they want it to be done. And then the third thing that I also kind of remind myself of is sometimes the inadequacy of the feedback that we give, that sometimes staff will think that compliance does not matter to anyone, including those of us trying to implement it. And so with some of the things Karen talked about, making sure there's a visibility of management support in the process of rolling out, giving feedback on an ongoing basis, becomes another approach to, again, addressing those distractions that are translated or that we perceive as resistance. So again, I guess what I'm trying to say is that those kinds of distractions or what we may perceive as resistance, I would like to suggest are almost normal human behavior. And when you look at it that way, it tends to present solutions that are likely to be practical and realistic in solving those problems. And again, that process of preparing for spread helps to prepare you for those kinds of issues and have a game plan for them that you should then probably include in your written plan and address. I don't know if that, you know, that answers your questions more directly.
And Karen?
Yes, I'd like to comment on that question as well, if you don't mind, real quick. I think that sometimes we overlook the obvious. Some of the most incredible changes we've made in critical care recently have been because of patient feedback. And I really would have not thought about that before, but a good, for instance, is that in our open visiting that we're trialing, we had several physicians who basically said, there is no way we want open visiting, we couldn't possibly get our work done. And we had a few who wanted to try it, and eventually the two that didn't tried it, and they found out the patient comments were just incredible. And not only that, but they actually saved time in their day as they went through it, because once the patients were comfortable being there and talking in front of the patient with the physician, they didn't get called time and time again with small questions. They were able to really have a good discussion with the family. So sometimes it's just getting feedback from people you wouldn't expect and doing a test of change around the person that might demonstrate that this old habit really could go away and it won't cause much of an issue. To the compensation piece, we've used compensation here. We have not used it at the beginning of an initiative, though. We start out with trying to tie the initiative that we're tackling to our strategic goals and vision. And for us, it was a more direct patient focus and growth. And those are the two that we used as we went through the office redesign initiative. Eventually, several years into it, we tied some basic compensation, some of the key metrics that measure our progress. And it is tied to both administrative and physician partners because that's the way we're organized here. And I think it has been helpful. I don't think it's the end all, though. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And maybe I'll pass this along to you, Marie. We have about 10 minutes remaining, and I have three calls left in the phone queue. Rockville, Maryland is next, then Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Bedford, Massachusetts will follow that. So we'll go first to Deborah's location in Rockville. The line is open. Rockville, go ahead.
Hi. These questions are, there are two of them for Dr. Amapa. First of all, have you developed a self-assessment instrument incorporating these processes that you discussed, and or do you know if one is available? And then the second question is, what about the importance of being ready to analyze the data in assessing readiness, not necessarily just building and collecting the data? It seems that some innovations can accumulate a lot of data, for example, event reporting systems, but there may not be enough emphasis on the resulting analysis and circulating that back to those who provide the data for change.
Okay, thank you. All right, first part of it, whether or not there's a self-assessment instrument, I'm the process of writing this up. You probably won't find this anywhere. Again, this is through some time of learning from our mistakes and experience learned from others that I came up with this tool. I'm the process of writing that up. So I guess you probably would find that when I've developed that. So no, you probably won't find that yet. Well, not probably, you won't. The second part is, yes, I think that when you're looking at that specific question, are we ready and able to support the registry or the data that we'll need for measurement and feedback? Yes, it does include a discussion around how we're going to analyze and display and play with this kind of data sort of thing. Yes, I think that's going to be a critical component. Again, yes, not just in the collection of it, but also the processing of it, which includes analyzing of those kinds of data. So, yes, I think that's a critical component of assessing your readiness.
Karen, I don't know whether you want to add to that. I know that you've spent quite a bit of effort around the issue of data and analyzing and sharing it. Do you have any thoughts to that?
Yeah, I think that we've incorporated, we have system-wide scorecards, which we've incorporated components of the different initiatives in both inpatient and outpatient metrics. I think, again, I can't stress enough that feedback and using the tools are important, but sitting down as a group, as a team, and discussing them and looking for the variations in care and trying to, again, just call out new tests of change and new ideas is absolutely critical to moving forward.
Great, thanks. Well, one of the calls in the future is going to go into the issue of measurement and in more detail so we can cover some of these questions then also.
Thanks, Marie, and thanks to Rockville for that question. Next to Saskatoon and Christina's location, the line is open. Go ahead with your question. Saskatoon, are you with us? Apparently not. We will go next to Bedford, Massachusetts, to James' location. And Bedford, go ahead with your question, please.
This is Jim Schlosser. I have a question for either speaker, Dr. Afoma and Ms. McKinley, about measurement and the difference, how you found the importance or utility of different kinds of measurement. One kind of measurement is a performance measurement of the process, like a wait time or patient satisfaction or a clinical outcome. Another measure is measuring the spread of the innovation itself. Has a clinic adopted a specific change strategy, like extending the return visit interval or the specific change that we want to promote? How have you found the relative importance of the, I think we all do performance measures, so I guess the specific question is how important is it to track the spread of the specific innovations, and what's the best way you found to do that?
You want to address that, Karen?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I'll speak from a provider's viewpoint. One of the things I noticed as we started to talk about when we started to implement that cardiovascular collaborative and the data that we needed to look at, one of the things I had with the providers, everybody thought that, oh, well, I'm doing such a good job my patient care that the level of blood pressure controls my patients. It must be like 98, 90, or 90, 95%. Until we put together the data, and it showed that it was like national average, about 30 to 40%. of our patients how to control blood pressure, and it was an amazing learning experience for the providers when they realized, oh, really, sort of thing. So I guess the value of feedback is making people realize what actually is and not just based on perception. And if you can make that measurement as objective as humanly possible, it makes that buying into it even better. And to change behavior, again, I think what we discussed, I learned in that measurement and feedback session, it is critical to remember that data that is believed in and it's trusted in is critical. People really, you know, then get a feeling of how they are actually performing. So it's very important, again, in looking at what data to collect. Some of that data has to look at the extent to which it actually measures the performance set of a few people that you can then trace back to. I mean, we know that the system is responsible for most of these changes, but some of those measures we can attribute to at least a small group of people that allows them then to compare the performance with other benchmarks or other people in other units or settings in the same organization that then help to change behavior. So one cannot overemphasize the criticalness of that measurement of feedback process to change behavior. Also, to give you a sense of progress, you know, you want to be able to showcase how you're doing. You want people to see that. If you intend to spread to other sides, people need to be seeing that. Your board and management have to feel that the resources they committed for this particular spread or innovation is paying off. That makes it easier for you then to ask for more resources or to make the case for more change and so on. That's another way. And then, of course, when it comes to grant writing, the data, especially when it's objective and, you know, can be defended and reproduced, will be critical. So I think one of the things that we understand is that with any innovation and spreading and stuff like that, like Marie said, the setup as a critical component, measurement and feedback system, that if you don't have, you're probably not ready to implement or spread that innovation.
I absolutely agree with everything you've said, and I'd just like to add two very quick things. One is we used action plans extensively when the feedback loop was discussed with the team and they received some of their metrics. They would need to develop action plans or tests of change to do for the next interim period, no different than like learning sessions that we do with IHI. That's very effective because it keeps everybody on target with where we're trying to go. The second thing is telling stories. We've used a lot of storyboards in our system, bringing operations level team leaders, those kinds of folks together in a room and talking about the progress that's made over a certain period of time, but telling it through a story about a specific test of change or actions that might have been taken in a site. And that's a very powerful tool. Some of those stories are out among the organization before you can really blink, and they're good. They spread success, and in doing so, also allow you to sort of to measure the spread that's occurring. That's it.
And thanks to Bedford for that question. We'll go next. I see Saskatoon has returned, so we'll try again for Saskatoon at Christina's location. Go ahead. The line is open.
Yeah, this question is for Mrs. Charles. Would a culture of safety survey may help in the preparation for a spread?
Could you repeat your question? I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing.
And the question is if a survey on culture of safety will help in the preparation of the spread.
So the question, as I understand it, is whether there's a survey about the culture of an organization and whether or not they're ready for spread?
That's right.
That's right. You know, there are, I believe, some surveys that I have seen that do address some of the issues that would be involved with, you know, looking at the culture within a target site or within an organization. And so there are some that are available. And let me say to both that question as well as to the question about whether there's some kind of self-assessment tool, and St. Anthony was saying that he's developing it. We're at IHI in the process of expanding the qualityhealthcare.org website to include a section on spread. It's not up and running yet, but one, it's our intention to share with you, all of you and everyone else that's interested in spread, tools such as that. And so we don't have them available at this point, but as they become available and as we, you know, collect and learn more from organizations, if people are willing to share, and we hope they are, we are planning to put that type of material on the QHC website. So.
And hopefully that takes care of that question. We have time, I think, for one remaining question. We have about a minute and a half total to take care of the question and answer to Linda's location in San Francisco. The line is open. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, this is Kathy. I was just wondering if Karen or the other speakers, any tips on leadership development in terms of when you spot informal leaders and they need development in the organization, and any particular wisdom in terms of training them how to give feedback? Do you outsource that? Do you use internal coaches? How do you accomplish that?
And just a reminder, we have about a minute for the answer. Sorry about that.
I'll just tell you, we've used internal coaches and a lot of reading material and role-playing.
Yes, yes, I think we've done a lot of internal. We've also, you know, have had people attend different leadership development seminars, you know, participating in conferences like this. Yes, yeah, so I guess all of the above. Any opportunity to get people to be educated, even encouraging them to do MBAs and you know, further education and stuff like that.
Right, and this is Marie. We've found it very helpful to even have almost kind of scripts for senior leaders, for example, as they meet with a team. A lot of senior leaders would love to provide more support to a team, but in a sense, they really don't know how to do it. And so just having almost like a scripted outline for people to follow in terms of how to engage in that kind of conversation is something that, you know, I've heard organizations have used such a thing. So I think anything like that can be developed as part of your internal training would certainly be helpful.
And Marie, any closing comments from you for the next minute or so?
Well, I don't believe so. I think we're probably ready to wrap up and to remind everyone to use the discussion section that's on QHC. I just checked it. I've been checking it over the last week, and we haven't had any brave souls who would post a question, but we hope that you will do that. If you're having any difficulty accessing the qualityhealthcare.org website or have any you know, questions about that, you can always contact IHI directly at ask@ihi.org. We encourage you to do that. And also remind you to fill out your CMEs. And just to remind everyone that in this session, we've had the opportunity to hear about the different components of SPREAD, and we'll be moving on to another, to drilling down into the next component on next week's call, which is on communication. So we look forward to having all of you with us. And I want to thank both of our speakers, Karen McKinley and Dr. St. Anthony Amofa, for your time and for your insights on this issue of leadership.
Thank you, Marie, and that
thank you.
That concludes today's program, Framework Leadership and Setup for SPREAD, brought to you by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement and presented by Dr. St. Anthony Amofa, Karen McKinley, and moderated by Marie Schall. And please remember, attendees on this call have 30 days from today to complete the online survey and receive continuing education credit. Instructions for completing the survey appear on the last page of your materials. Your comments and suggestions are helpful also, as they help us provide you with future quality programming. Today's program is copyright 2003 by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, all rights reserved. Thank you for joining us for this program, and enjoy the rest of your day. You may disconnect now.